I do appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning. I know David and Patrice and their families had a great time down in Orlando for the week. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, he asked if I would fill in for him. I said, sure, I'd love to. What an honor. And so about a week or two after that, I started counting the one-word lessons to see what I would be speaking on. And I realized the topic I would have, and so I went into his office just a couple weeks ago, and I said, David, there's a little bit of a problem. I'm not really qualified to speak on the topic of self-control. That's not something I've really mastered yet. And he said, and I quote, well, why do you think I'm going on vacation? So you get what you get this morning as we talk about this idea of self-control. So there was a woman who was a part of one of those diet clubs, and they were having their weekly meeting, and it was her turn to share how she had done for the week. And she started to tell them how over the weekend she had made this cake for her family, her family's favorite cake. And her family had eaten about half of it during dinner. And so the next day, all she could do was stare at that cake. Every time she walked by it, she would just stare at that cake. And so finally, she decides just to cut just a little piece off of that cake just to satisfy her craving. And so she does, and she enjoys it so much that she decides just to cut one more little piece off of that cake again. And the next thing she knows, she's eaten the rest of the cake. And her diet club members are just really trying to console her. And she shared with them how disappointed she was in herself for her lack of self-control, and how disappointed her husband would be knowing that she had eaten the other half of the cake. And so finally someone asked her, well, what did your husband say when he found out? And she smiled and said, oh, he never found out. I made another cake and ate that half as well. Well, one thing is for sure, self-control is a struggle. And if you struggle with it like me, would you say amen? Yes, so many of us struggle with it. This word self-control has a really interesting meaning. If you look at it in biblical terms, the Greek word for self-control carries with it this idea to get a hold of or to get a grip on. Vincent's Word Studies, one of the references that I looked at, added that it meant to hold in your hand your passions and desires. It's almost like you have mastered your own cravings and passions and desires, that you can hold them within your hand and constrain them to do whatever you want to do. So here's my little working definition to make it a little easier to remember. Self-control is knowing that you can, but deciding that you won't. It's knowing that you can, but deciding that you won't. It's that discipline of choosing between what you want now and what you really want the most. Well, if we're honest, I think many of us in this room would probably admit that self-control is not something that we have fully master, just we as people in general. You can go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and what was the one thing God told Adam and Eve, don't do? Don't eat from this one tree. You can eat from any other tree but this one. And the only thing they could look at and focus on was that one tree, until finally they gave in and lost their self-control. Think about the number of people who at the start of this year made as one of their New Year's resolutions, I'm going to exercise more. And in fact, I'm going to go and get my own membership to a gym. And if you regularly go to a gym, you hate the month of January because there's no parking spots, there's no dreadmills. I call them not treadmills, but dreadmills, because it's just a bunch of dread when you get onto that thing. But there's no open equipment. And you just know, you just got to give it about 3 to 4 weeks, and then the parking lot will be back to normal. So many people will not stick with their commitment. I don't know about you. My weakness, I really have two of them. One is sweet tea. I'm not going to share with you because I would have to confess too much to that addiction. But my second one is the snooze button. Anybody a snoozer? I was not a snoozer until I got married, and Haley introduced to me the art of snoozing, and it's beautiful. It's wonderful. And even knowing that I'm going to preach on self-control this morning, I had decided I was going to get up about 30 minutes earlier than I normally do on a Sunday just to have plenty of time to study, and I snoozed through that 30 minutes. It's a struggle. Maybe you had a notification on your phone, and so you pulled it out and you checked the notification, and then you decided to hop on Facebook or Instagram, and the next thing you know, 20 minutes has passed, and you're totally unaware because you're in what we call a scroll hole, where you're just scrolling, totally oblivious to life going on around you. Well, in Matthew chapter 4, Jesus gives the ultimate demonstration of self-control. Every time I read this, I'm amazed by His power of self-control. Let's read it together. Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. Here's what it says. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. For after fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, He was hungry. Now, I love the Bible because the Bible makes me laugh sometimes. It says some of the most obvious statements on the planet. Now, imagine you have gone without food for 40 days. If I go 4 hours, I am starving. So imagine going 40 days without food. Do you think that Matthew had to tell us Jesus was hungry? I'm already implying that in my mind. I just love how he points out the obvious. He was hungry. And the tempter came to him and said, if you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. So if that's me, I'm like, you know what? That's a really good idea. And not just any kind of bread. Like I'm going with those old Charlie rolls with a little honey butter on the side. You know what I mean? If you're going to make this miracle happen, you need to do it right. I mean, I have gone 40 days. I'm not going like Sara Lee loaf bread here. We're going to go like hoagie roll or something to really get full here. But that's not what Jesus does. Now understand that the devil is throwing his best shot at Jesus. He knows what he's been doing for the last month and a half. And he knows his greatest vulnerability right now is his hunger. He goes right after his self-control. And Jesus has that amazing response. It is written, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. So this idea of self-control really implies that within us there's this battle going on, that there's a part of ourself that wants something that we must bring under control. And we're divided in our mind, and sometimes we're even divided in our heart. In fact, the Bible has a lot to say about the idea of self-control. I want to show you a few verses that I find really interesting. Proverbs 25 and verse 28 says, like a city whose walls are broken through is a person without, or a person who lacks self-control. In ancient times, a city's walls were considered a part of their protection, part of their defense system. And so if we don't have that self-control in our life, how can we defend ourselves against anything? 1 Peter 4 and verse 7, Peter says, the end is near, therefore be alert and of sober mind. Or some translations say, be alert and self-controlled so that you may pray. Joey read for us, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against these things there is no law. And then 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7, God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of self-control. We're going to come back to those last two in just a little bit. But there's two big things I want you to understand this morning about self-control. The first thing is this, it requires training. Self-control requires training. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, starting in about verse 24, Paul goes into this discussion talking about athletes. And some have thought that he may even be referring to athletes who would participate in what were the original Olympic Games. And he's talking about a runner. And he says in verse 25 that everyone who competes in the Games exercises self-control in all things. And so if you've ever been a part of any type of athletics, you have experienced this. There are days that you do not want to practice. There are days that you do not want to work out and exercise and get better at whatever it is that you're trying to compete in. I despise running. Now, if there's a ball involved, I'll run all day long. But just to go out and to run, it gets to this idea of what this Greek word for exercise means. From it, we get our English word, agonize. You ever decided, I'm going to go running, and about three steps in, you're already in agony? That's because it requires training, right? You don't go run a marathon and just walk out your door and run 26.2 miles. It requires an insane amount of training. If you're watching any basketball or baseball or just finished
watching football season, those guys didn't just, well, maybe some of them came out of the womb extremely ripped and in shape, but most of them at least exercised and worked hard, and where most of us were sitting on our couch, they were out in the dog days of summer getting better and getting in shape, right? It requires training. And Paul makes this point that our self-control, our ability to bring our desires of the flesh under control is going to require our training. And sometimes it's even going to be agonizing. Well, Titus chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, Paul would also say this, that the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions, and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age. It requires training. You don't just wake up today and say, well, you know what? I'm just going to be self-controlled. I'm going to bring all of my ungodly or unhealthy passions and desires into control. I'm just going to grab a hold of them and get a grip on them, and I'm going to master them today. It requires training day after day after day. But not only does it require training, but self-control requires everything that we have. Some days it is hard, isn't it? When you decide, you know what, I'm going to do better today. It requires everything that you have, every amount of energy that you have, every thought that you have. And here's what Peter would say in 2 Peter chapter 1 in verse 5. He said, for this reason, make every effort. The idea here is the idea of diligence. And not only just diligence of doing it day after day, but with every amount of energy that you have. Make every effort. Do everything you have to do to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control. It requires everything that you have. We get a little taste of this from Matthew chapter 5 and verse 29, where Jesus, speaking on the context of lust, would say, if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and cast it away from you. That's intense, isn't it? Man, if you can't control yourself, just gouge your eye out and throw it away from you. Is he speaking literally? Some people say yes, some people say no. I think the point is, he's saying you do whatever you have to do to avoid this sin. And when we think about this fierceness of self-control, it does require everything that we have to do. Because you know what happens when we say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore? We do it. Because your brain doesn't understand the word not. It doesn't. Your brain doesn't get it. When you say, I'm not going to think about cake, what are you now thinking of? Cake. It doesn't work, right? And so there's this struggle within us that I know it requires training. I know I don't just master it on day one. I know it takes time. And I know it takes a lot of effort. It takes everything that I have within me to get my life under control, to get these passions and these desires and these emotions under control. And so I resort to just saying, well, today I'm going to do better. And you know what Dr. Phil's famous question is? How's that working out for you? To which most, if not all of us, would have to say, well, not too good, right? We try and try, and I say, well, I'm just going to try harder. And it doesn't work. So I came across this quote from a guy named Richard Foster, who says this, our ordinary method of dealing with ingrained sin is to launch a frontal attack. We rely on our willpower and determination. Whatever may be the issue for us, anger, fear, bitterness, gluttony, pride, lust, substance abuse, we determine never to do it again. We pray against it, fight against it, and set our will against it, but the struggle is all in vain, and we find ourselves once again morally bankrupt. So if there's any type of sin that you struggle with on a regular basis, what is your natural response? Well, I'm just going to stop. I'm just going to pray about it, and I'm going to do whatever I have to do. I'm going to train myself. I'm going to make every effort. I'm going to just work harder at not doing this one thing or whatever it is that I'm struggling with. And maybe I do better for a time. Maybe a couple days, a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months. But it seems like every time we find ourselves right back in the same struggle. Why is that? Here's why. I think because our focus is off. For so many of us, we think about self-control and thinking, well, I just have to try harder. But that's not the answer, at least not all of it. And here's the big idea that I want you to take away today when thinking about self-control. Our focus cannot just be on our effort, but also on our surrender. It cannot be all about my effort and my ability and my willpower and my determination. It's part of the equation, but it's not fully the answer. It's also got to be about my surrender. And to prove that, I want to take you back in your mind to the passage that Joey read for us. But the fruit of the Spirit is love. Why does he start there? Because love is the greatest. Love is the one thing that will never fail and will never pass away. So he starts with the greatest. And he works his way down the list. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. And down there at the bottom on the very end of the list is self-control. You want to know why he put it there? This is just my opinion. It's because when I sit down to eat my mother's cooking, never my wife's because she makes everything good, but my mother's cooking, you know, sometimes she'd make stuff that I didn't really like. I would always save the worst for last. That's just the way I always did it. I'd rather wait till the very end to suffer through the worst one. I know some of you are like, well, eat the worst one first, so you end on the best. I'd rather start with the best and end with the worst. And so I'd always save the worst one for last. Why does Paul list self-control last? I don't know. I think it's because it's the hardest one to master. So let's just put it there at the end so that we can get the others set, and then we can go after that whole self-control thing. But here's what I want you to focus on. Notice the first four words of verse 22, or maybe five words. But the fruit of the, what? Spirit is love, joy, peace, all the way down to self-control. Notice what it does not say. It does not say, but the fruit of Eric is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Because it's not my fruit. It's not what I'm naturally good at. My fruit is listed in verses 19 through 21. Those are the works of the flesh. That's the things that we're good at. And that's not a good list. But the fruits of the Spirit, they're fruits of the Spirit. And then Paul would go on to say there at the end of verse 24, and those who have crucified the flesh with its passions, those who are led by the Spirit have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. God did not give us a spirit of fear, but a spirit of love, power, love, and self-control. It's from the Spirit of God. So here's what I want you to understand. As a Christian, self-control is not just about bringing my passions and my desires under my control, but really it's about bringing my passions and desires under the control of Christ through the power of His Spirit. The idea of self-control really is just an oxymoron if you think about it, because self-control is really connected to my ability to be controlled by God. So really, it's God control. It's not really self-control. We're talking about God control. So Jesus would say in Luke 9 and verse 23, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. So here's our part of the equation. Here's our effort. Our effort in it is self-denial. Telling myself, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. No, that's not what's best for me. No, I'm going to bring this under the control of Christ. So I'm going to deny myself. I'm going to take up my cross, this instrument of death where I'm going to lay my life down and sacrifice it to God and bring my life under the surrender and under the control of Christ and follow Him. That's the full equation. My part is self-denial, saying no to myself so that I can say yes to Jesus. So that I can say no to my desires and my will, so that I can say yes to His desires for my life and His will for my life. My focus cannot be just on my effort. And so I must take these desires of myself that must be brought under the control of Christ. So the more we deny ourselves, the more we can surrender to Jesus. So my question for you is this.
What area of your life do you need more God control? Not self-control. What area of your life do you need more God control? Because that must be the answer. Because if it's not working out for you just to work harder and to try harder and to say you're going to do better, if that's not working, then maybe it's time to allow God to control that area of your life and to surrender it to Him. So I made a list of some different areas I know that in my life I have struggled with and struggle with that maybe you'll connect with as well. What areas of our life do we need more God control? Maybe it's in our moods, in our words, in our reactions. You ever come home just having a bad day? Or just having one of them days that it's not really a bad day, it's just kind of a kind of day. You know what I'm talking about? Where you're not good, but you're not bad. You're just kind of somewhere in the blah. Here's what one man decided to do. His neighbor had a tree stump that needed to be removed. And so he decided, rather than to just go dig it up, he would use some dynamite he had stored up. And boy, did it work. It actually launched this tree stump into an airborne missile 163 feet before crashing through his neighbor's house. The stump opened this 3-foot hole in their roof, split the rafters, crashed all the way down into one of their neighbor's dining rooms. Sometimes our words, our reactions, and our moods are just like that tree stump. Because of our lack of God control, that we come home where we've had one of those days and something happens and it kind of sets us off and something explodes within us because we don't have it under the control of God, and it becomes explosive in the lives of our loved ones. Maybe it's with our schedule. We're so busy today. So many things going on. So many things that we have said yes to that requires us to say no to so many other things. And sometimes our schedules get out of whack and we get so focused on going and doing that we are forgetting what is most important. And so maybe it's our schedules that need to be brought under the control of God. It could be relationships. Maybe there's some friendships in our life that are not good for us and they're pulling us away from God. Maybe it's some type of dating relationship that you can find yourself in that's pulling you away from God. And it's causing you to think things and do things that are not appropriate for a child of God. And that relationship needs to be brought under the control of God. It requires training and discipline and effort. And it requires surrender. Maybe it's our finances. I'm not going to talk long about that one. I will step on my own toes too many times. Bringing our money and our checkbooks and our family's focus under the control of God. Here's a big struggle today, our screen time. So many of us, even adults, are struggling more and more with this rather than face-to-face communication. Just next time you go out to eat, if you do that regularly, next time you go out to eat, take a look around at the tables and see who is talking and who is in a scroll hole and wasting those opportunities with their family and with their friends. Could be that we need to set boundaries on the amount of time that we set in front of a screen. Could be our health and what we're eating. Maybe that needs to be brought under the control of Christ. I know I'm preaching on that right before we're going to go eat lunch, and I guess now I'm going to have to eat a salad or something so that it's brought under the control of Christ. I may should have thought about that one rather than the fried chicken I'm really craving and desiring right now. Could be our spiritual disciplines, the amount of time each day that we're spending in study and prayer to God. Maybe that needs to be brought under the control of Christ, setting that time aside every day. I don't know what yours is, and maybe I didn't even list yours, but my challenge for you is as you go home, as you leave today, think about, is there an area of my life that I'm struggling with self-control? And if yes, then the answer cannot just be, I'm going to try harder. I've got to bring this area. Even if it's something really simple and really not even sinful, it's just something that does not need to be mastering your life, bring it under the control of Christ. I want to close with this story. There's this race called the Pikes Peak Ascent. It's one of the most challenging foot races across the United States. It's 13.32 miles long. and throughout the race, you will ascend 7,815 feet in altitude. You're basically running up a mountain for over 13 miles. Doesn't that sound like fun? Well, I read about one man who's actually run this race 20 times. That's amazing. The last time he ran this race was 1 week before his 67th birthday. They asked him, "How do you do this?" Well, his secret was every day he would run 6 miles without fail, every day. Didn't matter where he was, he ran 6 miles. And he's done that for most of his adult life. He realized that if he wants to complete this race, he's got to train every day. The key to going the distance is the discipline of running every day, is what he would say. Well, the key to self-control for us is trusting God, denying ourselves, and surrendering more and more of our heart to Him. And it must start today. Now, it requires training. It requires all the effort that you have. It will require you to risk things and give up some things. But the answer is trusting God, giving Him your heart, allowing His desires to become yours. So this morning, if we can help you in any way, if there's an area of your life that you need to bring under the control of God and you want to lean on your brothers and sisters in Christ for some of that strength, or if you just want to make that commitment publicly today that no longer will I be mastered by this sin that is in my life and I want to submit my life to the rule and reign of Jesus Christ by being baptized into Him, or maybe you just want to publicly say today that no longer will I be ruled by these passions and desires, but I am committing my heart back to Jesus today. If we can help you in any way, we would love to pray with you, to encourage you, and to even see you baptized into Christ this morning. If you need to respond to the invitation, won't you come right now as we stand and sing?